So I decided to do an audio recording for this week's class as my blog contribution, partially inspired by Miguel. I apologize in advance for this being awkward, but I just thought it would be a nice platform to describe some of my thoughts I had from this week's reading. So my first inclination when reading Miguel's piece, which I thought was excellent, about the response to COVID-19 through social workers and community organizers was thinking back to the first piece we read for this class, for the second week, which was the opinion piece by Brown's president, which I have it in front of me. The title was "College Campuses Must Reopen in the Fall. Here's How We Do It." So in between reading Miguel's piece and reading the handout that lays out elements of white supremacist culture, I couldn't help but see heavy themes of that. Namely the sense of urgency, this president basically saying what we have as a necessary impact of COVID is the closing of college campuses, and that is necessarily horrible. What I remember distinctly about reading this piece was thinking it was pretty inconsequential. It was a pretty, I didn't consider it a particularly robust argument. She had her point of view, and I didn't disagree with anything she said. Like, sure, it is undeniably an issue, the impact that higher ed and education in general has had from COVID. But it was only when reading all the other pieces that week, all the other news pieces and op-eds, and seeing the reference to this piece by other academics and other educators, that you sort of realize the heavy sense of entitlement that's involved in this, the extremely short-sightedness, the isolation this woman has from the larger theme of what is higher ed in the United States. So here she is stating her problem, saying that it's something that must necessarily be fixed, and that also, she's also implying that college can only really exist in one way, which is in person, on a remote campus with people either living in dorms or living nearby, close enough to form a community, a residential community. And there's just so many implications with that. Financial, racial, I mean, who are the people who are most likely to feel comfortable on a residential campus? Well, probably students who resemble what the majority of students look like. But mainly, I think it's that she writes with such command, just to say this is absolutely how we need to solve what's happening, that I think deeply enforces supremacist culture. I'm trying to find a place in which to quote. This loss, only a part of which might be recouped through online courses, would be catastrophic, especially for the many institutions that were in precarious financial positions before the pandemic. Well, here she's, like, nodding towards the idea that there exists a range of financial stability and health within institutions of higher ed in America. But even regardless of the intent behind that sentence or even the meaning, it's the choice of words, catastrophic, loss, the emphasis of the idea that online learning will not allow for the full experience, which of course is the case, but definitely undercuts a large percentage of students who will never have the option to learn in person, for who online education is the only option. And I think when she, this paragraph, higher education is also important to the U.S. economy. The sector employs about 3 million people, and as recently as the 2017-18 school year, pumped more than $600 billion of spending into the national gross domestic product. Again, she has an insight into a type of larger network that is inherently supremacist. I mean, who are the people who are in proximity to something like national gross domestic product? Well, that would be the Fed, and who was the Fed run historically by white people? This is also reminding me of the power elite that we read for week four for the class David and I facilitated. Even here, this paragraph, the reopening of college and university campuses in the fall should be a national priority. I guess why
my first thought was to go back to this op-ed again, was that my initial reading of it was, this is a pretty uncontroversial piece. Like, okay, she's strong in her claims. Her claims aren't that insane. Like, colleges are closed. It is a huge inconvenience for everyone, and it's a lessening of experience for students. But then reading, when you think about who are the people who have had the biggest impacts on marginalized groups and individuals, social workers, community organizers, people who don't fit into the traditional academic mold, who in some sense, if they're a student, are maybe a person first. And then, of course, reading the piece in New Yorker by the Brooklyn College professor, because the president of Brown later goes on to say, well, maybe testing could become a priority, and each college will have their own testing site. And the Brooklyn College professor says, well, we sometimes don't have soap. How can we expect that level of scientific innovation in a place that fails to meet basic needs? It makes you realize that CUNY is an institution that, for better or for worse, I mean, they don't necessarily do it well, but when you think about spaces of elite education, consider the humanity in their students. And maybe that's because we are, I shouldn't say we, but CUNY is a commuter school. It doesn't lend itself to the same kind of residential environment. And because students are coming there of their own volition, they don't live within, you know, a 5-minute walk from a certain academic building, you have to consider their humanity first. You have to consider subway fares and train times. And also because CUNY and public institutions in general allow for a larger percentage of quote-unquote non-traditional college students. Of course, you're going to have students who have children or who are, you know, taking care of elder parents. It's kind of assumed that if you're in a residential college, you're closed off from that. So it's hard not to read this piece now, considering the conversations we've had this semester, and not see the supremacist nature of it. You know, it's mainly in that it's so... Her point of view is almost like, it's so obvious that this is the problem and the solution. How can you not see it? And that's to say because her context is remarkably different from the majority of universities in this country. And I think she points out the liberal elite bubble of certain people who exist in academia, which is to say that colleges exist in one way for a certain age group, in a certain demographic, in a certain lived experience, and so if that's the case, there's necessarily one solution. But, you know, and this is why the problem is so complicated, there will never be one type of college, or one type of schooling. So I couldn't really help but think about this piece, mostly because I saw so many traces of how the solution to COVID for impoverished New Yorkers involved a type of learning, a type of know-how that doesn't exist in a traditional academic environment, and how a place like CUNY, I think, honors that a lot more than the traditional university.